Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, welcome to Tax Tuesday. This is Toby Mathis and
Jeff Webb.
Going to kick off another Tax Tuesday. So happy Tuesday to everybody. And there's a few hellos, Jerry, Sherry, a bunch of folks out there. So if you have not been a part of a Tax Tuesday, then I'll just give you the real idea is bringing tax knowledge to the masses. This is educational. It's meant to be kind of fast and furious. We usually answer about 200 questions. So there's a lot of questions that we're going back and forth on. I try to grab the questions that are relevant to the questions that I'm going to be answering first off, and then we get into certain activities. Like some people ask very personal questions. I tend to say kick those via the Tax Tuesday to Anderson Advisors just because I don't want to breach your confidentiality, or I don't want to give you a really bad answer where it may be a negative response. So I usually say just email those in. If you need a detailed response, become a Platinum client. It's very inexpensive, or a tax client. Platinum is a whopping $35 a month, and you can ask all the questions you feel like. This is fast, fun, and educational, and like all things in this world, it helps to know a few of the rules, and that's what we're going over. If you want to follow us on YouTube and Facebook, it's really easy. Go to Anderson Advisors / either Facebook or YouTube. We have lots and lots of videos we put out, lots of content that we're constantly putting it out. I see a question that already came up. Michelle, I'll try to answer your question before we're out. Opening questions, we have a whole bunch of schmuncha of questions that we're going to answer today. Actually, I have 4 pages of these. So we're going to answer what rate I am taxed for for my LLC. What rate am I taxed for my LLC? That's kind of weird, but what's my tax rate for my LLC? Can I buy a personal items or pay off personal bills with my business credit card? Among the following expenses, startup, operation, inventory, capital, which business entity is best to deduct the most in order to save on taxes for a newly formed business? We'll answer that. What investment opportunities can be considered that have no tax liability, minimum risk, and at least 10% annual return? If we could give you that answer, we'd all be gajillionaires, but we can give you some stuff that statistically is close. But yeah, no risk, 10% at least, no tax. You got to be kidding me, right? Well, there are some things that are close. Yeah, I'm going to, yeah, here, let me show you some great things. No, there's nothing out there like that, but there's some things close. Can I add the carrying costs, interest, insurance, utilities to the basis of a property that is flipped? Can I deduct real estate education expenses even though I don't have any profits? What happens if you extended but didn't pay your estimated tax by April 15th? Oh my God, I'm just kidding. I just think that's funny. Have they come to your home yet? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, don't scare them anymore. Somebody
have you had knocking at midnight? It's not Freddy Krueger, it's the IRS. No, I had a real estate school for 15 years and have bought and sold properties. Can I write off the training expenses incurred since I have a strong background in training academy and made investments? So I'm going to assume that's real estate training, but we'll answer that one. I have 2 529 plans. I'd like to cash out or reallocate. The funds were not used for college. How do I do this? Let's see. Can a corporation or LLC have a self-directed Roth 401k and hold foreign currency as an option? So that we have a lot of these guys. So we're going to have, this is going to be a nice long one. I know we're going to have lots of questions because you guys are already asking a whole bunch of questions. My page is already filling up. I am 73 and have a self-directed IRA and a brokerage account. I have lots of real estate losses. Can I roll part of my IRA into my Roth? And is there a limit to how much I can roll over? We'll answer that. If I buy a mobile home park, are the tax benefits the same as buying a residential stick brick property with the depreciation? We'll go into that for sure. If I were to have an online health coaching business where people can complete purchase transactions through an automated website, how will the income produced be taxed? We'll go over that. Let's just jump right on in. What rate am I taxed at for my LLC? And the answer is it depends. And here's how it works. An LLC does not exist for tax purposes. It is a state entity. You choose how it will be taxed. And you choose that on your SS4. It's actually when you're requesting your employer identification. So what rate? It's going to depend on what you pick there. So if it is a disregarded entity, it will be taxed at the owner's tax rate. So if it's you, then the profit or loss will flow onto your personal return. If it is a corporation, it will go onto the corporation's return. And then if it's an S corp, it'll flow down to the shareholders. If it is a C corp, it'll be taxed at the C corp level, assuming that it's not expensed out through other means. If it is a partnership, then the LLC will file a partnership return and hand K-1s, which is the allocation of income or loss to each partner. And it'll depend on that partner's tax rate. If it is a trust that owns the LLC, then it'll be the trust. If it is something like an IRA or a 401k, then it'll be taxed at that rate as well, which could be zero. So it all depends on how you choose to tax that LLC and who owns it. I hope that is helpful. Jeff, do you want to?
No, I mean, it goes back to what we often say, that an LLC is not recognized by the IRS. So we have to actually look to see how it's being taxed as what type of entity.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to go over them all again since you just did that.
Yep. So it always depends. It's kind of fun. So I hope you realize an LLC to me is a Swiss Army entity. It can be anything you want it to be.
Right.
That's why they're so versatile and so highly used. In fact, I'm sure that in non-traditional business, like if you're an investor or you're small or you're holding assets, the LLC is probably 90% of that business. Going public, it's a C corp only. If you're filing a nonprofit, it's going to be a corporation almost always. Otherwise, chances are you're going to see an LLC being used. They're just, since 1978, they've been around. They were really fully accepted in all jurisdictions around 2003, where we actually had guidance from the IRS as to how to tax single owners. So they're still fairly new kids on the block, and that's why you have a lot of accountants still not completely up to speed on them. You know, I say new kid on the block, but it's been, 16 years since we had the opinion on single owner, but it takes them a while to get the memo sometimes. Can I buy personal items or pay off personal bills with my business credit card? The answer is absolutely. However, depending on the type of entity, it's going to dictate whether that's taxed as just non-deductible personal expense, so it's non-deductible to the corporation, or whether that's going to be treated as payroll to you and be subject to withholding old age, death, survivors, Medicare, FUTA, SUTA, all these other workman's comp, all this fun stuff. So it's like all things tax, there's implications to it. So you got to be a little bit careful of when you buy personal items. Make sure that it's not buying it through the C corp, I guess, is one, or S corp.
Yeah, I mean, you can buy personal items and pay off personal bills, but that's an expense to you personally, not your business.
Yep. So if the business is paying you, they may as well have just written you a check.
Right.
So,
and to be honest, it makes it a little complicated when you start talking about, if you're not paying that credit off monthly, the interest and all involves some of it's personal, some of it's business.
And Tom just asked, why an S corp? Why do you got to worry about an S corp? Well, because if I just move money to a shareholder, ordinarily you have profits and you would just subtract it out of profits. That's a non-deductible expense. But if it's not, and you just paid yourself, chances are the IRS is going to classify that as either distribution in excess of basis or just flat out payroll.
Right.
So we got to be a little careful there. That's why I say it. Whenever you're in an employer-employee relationship, it's fantastic from a tax standpoint if you're reimbursing, but it's horrendous if you're taking assets or cash willy-nilly without understanding the implications of what you're doing. So that's why we never distribute real estate out of a corporation, because it's any appreciation is considered wages. Like, so there's implications to these things. If it's just a partnership or a sole proprietorship, we don't care. You're the same as it. Now, as an asset protection attorney, I would say that would be something that somebody could argue, hey, you're not respecting the entity. Mm-hmm. But if you're tracking it and you treat it as a personal payment, you're going to be okay. I've never seen that one actually trip somebody up, but it's certainly, you're giving somebody arrows for their quiver. And we have I'm going to get to a bunch of these questions. This is fun. Somebody's asking, can I use money from my C corp to pay personal credit cards used to fund pay for startup and training? Miss, I don't know how to say that. Vernessia? Yes, perfect. Vernessia. You can, and that would sound to me like a reimbursement where there's no tax implication to it, because if it's from a S corp or a C corp, it would qualify as an accountable plan and it can just pay pay you back. So if we set you up a C Corp and the C Corp reimburses or pays for the training, reimburses you, pays your personal credit card, then it's non-taxable to you.
Right.
That's actually what 25 CFR 162-2. That's this bizarre that popped into my head. That's weird. I must have been looking at it recently because I usually forget everything I read. All right, let's see. Only if I've been drinking. What investment opportunities can be considered? This is my favorite question. A unicorn.
I was hoping you had the answer for this.
Yeah, what investment opportunities can be considered that have no tax liability, minimum risk, and at least a 10% annual return? All right, so the answer is there's no such thing. Otherwise, everybody would be selling it. But the attorney accountant answer, Jeff, what's the best investment that you're probably not going to pay tax on? In fact, we have a high degree of control whether we ever pay tax on it. And you could never pay tax ever on this type of investment if you didn't want to. What would it be?
I'd probably say real estate.
Real estate. Yeah, absolutely. I would say, yeah, everybody said we'd all be rich. I would say that it's investment real estate specifically because we can depreciate the improvement on the property to offset our taxes. The risk, historical risk in real estate, every 10 years, it's up. You're going to have a hard time finding me a 10-year period where real estate lost money over that 10-year stretch. Even if you look at the last recession in 2007, the properties in 2017 were above it. Everywhere I looked, I did not see a single place, including Vegas, where we had a massive crushing blow, 75% loss. We were already back. We were back about 2 years prior. So that would be it. The other one that might work is something called Index Universal Life, where you're pairing it with life insurance, where the cash value grows with no tax liability. That's 26 USC 7702. The minimum risk is you can't go below zero. The 10% annual return is the only part where I have a problem. I think the historical return in those is 7%. So you're not quite at 7%, but you have to have the life insurance component. So there's that cost of the death benefit.
Now, one thing I wanted to add about the no tax liability, I can think of nothing that has no eventual tax liability with one exception.
What's that?
And you have to die.
Yeah. Oh, that's real estate. Or this, or Index Universal Life, because the proceeds of a life insurance policy are not taxable. And if you access the cash value, it's not taxable. So anyway, those were the two that I'd look at. I mean, those are two that I invest in. So I can just say this is not just figuratively speaking. Yeah, we'd all be rich. Somebody said wholesale life insurance. That's a whole life, probably that same thing. That was wholesale life insurance policies in the 80s. Yeah, that's probably true. Let's see if there's anything else. Nobody else really responded to that one. Infinite banking and whole life and mutual companies. Samuel, that's exactly what we're talking about with Index Universal Life and whole life. Those are the ones that are close. Somebody says, what about a Roth? Yeah, but there's still risk and the 10% return. The beautiful part about some of the financial vehicles is you can't go below zero. Like they buy options. So your worst case scenario is you didn't make any money that year, but they cap you usually about 13% of what you make. So if you look at it historically, they're at 7%. So I'm not going to tell you it's 10%. Real estate's really it. Like real estate, you can keep rolling real estate and do some amazing things. With the qualified opportunity zone, there's some things you can do there to minimize risk. You will have tax liabilities, the only problem, because you're going to, even in the opportunity zone, you're deferring taxes for 7 years and then you pay nothing if you hold for at least 10. So you know, like there's nothing where there's no tax liability, no risk. There's always going to be a degree of risk. That 10% is just...
And I would strongly suggest that if somebody is offering to sell you a unicorn, that you really do your homework on these things.
Make sure it's not a donkey with a cone attached to its head.
Right.
Yep. This is, what about a 702J? I'm not sure. I think it's 7702. That's, I think, what we're talking about. But that may be another. Is there a 702J?
No, 702 is partnership rules.
Partnership rules. Yep. So I don't think so. Can I add the carrying costs, insurance, interest, utilities to the basis of the property that is flipped? Jeff, do you want to knock?
Yeah, actually, you not only can you, you're required to add those carrying costs on your flip. You can't deduct anything that directly relates to a property that you're going to sell. It has to be included in your carrying costs, which will go into your inventory costs when you sell the property. So you do end up getting to deduct it in the same fashion once you actually sell a property.
Yeah, so you're adding it. Can I add? Yes, you're required to add. So not only can you, but you should. And that's the big difference between a flip. You're a car lot. You're buying cars to resell cars. Mm-hmm. This is interesting. I just had a couple of things that popped through, and I'm sorry. Some of you guys asked questions, and we'll get to them, but this is really interesting to me. Somebody asked, would it be better to have the personal credit card? This goes back to the question we answered earlier, the personal credit card transferred to business credit card to be able to bring up a personal credit score. This is something, Christine, that I dealt with years ago with somebody who was, they were really struggling on their personal credit score because they had a business credit card that wasn't really a business credit card. And the business credit card was in their personal name. So it was bringing down their personal credit. And as a result, they could not qualify for a low interest loan on their house, on their personal residence. And so what we did is we said, hey, let's set up a company, an S Corp. It reduced their taxes. The tax savings alone were about $10,000 a year. Then what we did is they had an IRA. We rolled that into a 401k and we loaned the money out of the 401k to pay off their credit cards, period. They just paid off all the credit cards. And then I had them open business credit cards. And if they were going to use credit, it was only to use the business credit card, not the personal credit card. And what was surprising to me is their credit score jumped 70 points in the first month, and they were actually able to reduce their interest. I think it was almost half a percent basis points on their loan, but it was a big house up in Bellevue, Washington. So it was pretty sizable. And so I never underestimate what having your personal credit score affected by your business credit cards does. So I would actually open up, like American Express will open up a card in the name of a business and not report it to your personal credit. Easy peasy. I know Capital One does, but you have to be above 100,000. I think you have to go through some steps there. But even if you did, let's say, have some credit and you're using it for your business, just make sure you're not exceeding 20%. Like what really blows you up is when you are using a large amount of credit in your credit lines, you're using up what you have accessible.
Right.
That's what really hammers you. So if you only have personal credit cards, then my thing to you is to make sure you have a business and then to establish credit cards in that business that do not report to your personal credit. That's going to be TransUnion, Equifax, or Experian. They will, and again, I can tell you for sure that American Express has those just because I have three in my pocket that do not report to my personal, and I've had them for almost over 20 years now. And I have some others too that are just business, so they do not report to my personal. I don't have much personal credit at all. It would be devastating if I did. All right, next one. There was another cool question, but I don't want to keep going crazy. All right, here's one that was from before. Can you deduct expenses to see a property you have passively invested? So that's another one. So like this kind of links in with the previous question. Actually, even links into this one. Mm-hmm. If you have investment expenses, you can offset your investment period, right?
Right.
So if you have a passive investment in something and you go see it, you can write it off against that income. If you have more expenses than you have income, then you have losses. And if you're passive, then you have restrictions on taking the loss. You can't offset. Somebody just said, why would it be devastating to have a lot of personal credit if you're using personal credit? So if I had a business credit card, like for example, I could actually give you real life examples. So client was running their business expenses on a credit card. They got a credit card. It was a $100,000 credit card. And they had one credit card. And I know the exact scenario. It was an American Express and they rolled it over to Capital One and they used that Capital One for the expenses. And it was like $70,000 of the 100. It lowered their credit score by almost 50 points the first month because you're using such a substantial portion of it. That's just how it works.
Yeah. So, you know, when you're looking at your FICO score, your credit score, how much credit you have is actually a very low impact on your score.
It's how much you're using.
How much of that you've used, it has a very high impact on your score.
Yep.
And they typically, if you for excellent credit, they're wanting you to have used maybe less than 10% of your total credit.
Yep. 10 to 20 is the magic number, right, from what I understand. And I don't have a crystal ball. I can just tell you from what we see. All right. Can I deduct real estate education expenses even though I don't have any profits? Jeff, what say you?
Yeah, it's not really all about your profits. It's how long you've been in the business. I mean, you may have been in the real estate business for 3 or 4 years and you just haven't done anything in the current year, but you did get some real estate education.
Well, that magic word profits, there's two things that it triggers. First off, if I don't have profits, it means, are you saying that the education is going to create a loss? Then you're going to have restrictions if it's passive. If it's active, like say you're a real estate agent, you'll be able to use that education expense as a loss. If it's, I'm investing in properties for the long haul and I'm not a real estate professional, which a real estate professional, just as an aside, means 750 hours in the field of real estate, buying and selling. So you're either a broker, a real estate agent involved in those transactions, you're a construction guy or something, and that's the number one use of your business time. If you can't qualify for it, then your spouse has to qualify for it, and you have to materially participate in your investment activities. You hit those, then now your losses you'll have active losses even though you have passive income. That's the holy grail for people that are investors in real estate. Is you want to be the real estate professional so you can offset all of your other income. And I use the example of my buddy and was an attorney in Savannah, Georgia, who offset about $3 million 1 year of his attorney practice income. He offset it all with his commercial property depreciation because his wife qualifies as a real estate professional. So there's that. If you are a brand new investor and you did real estate education, I'm going to tell you, you need to have a C corp.
Yep.
So you're going to want to make sure that you're in there.
Rental real estate is a passive activity, unless, mm-hmm. like you said, you're a real estate professional.
Yep.
And when that makes a difference is you're limited to $25,000 of losses from your rental, from your passive activity.
That's only if you...
Real estate passive activity.
Yeah, but that's only if you make less than $150,000 a year.
Actually, it's $120,000 it starts phasing out, and $150,000 it's gone.
Yep.
So you get no losses if you make more than $150,000.
Yep.
That's why it's important that if you can legitimately do it, that you have a real estate professional, either you or your spouse or...
Yeah. And in a real estate agent, you're fine.
Yeah. So then you get to deduct all your losses against your other income.
Yeah. And then there's the rule. It's 26 USC 183 that everybody calls the hobby loss rules. And there's a presumption that if you don't make money 3 out of 5 years, mm-hmm. that you're a hobby. And what they do is they say you can still deduct your expenses even then. You just can't create losses against your active income then. But that's only if you don't overcome the presumption. And if you show that you're trying to make money, then you can still overcome it. In fact, there's a great tax case with a guy 15 years lost money and he wrote off losses every year, and he was able to write it all off.
Yeah, I think there's a list of like a dozen or 15 different.
Uh-oh, somebody asked a mean accountant question. Why would you recommend a C corp for real estate investors? Is there there's also a chance of double taxation? Yes. So here's how it works. If you're going to be a real estate investor and you have expenses that would not be deductible to you, so we have this Woodley case that says, hey, if you don't own the real estate yet, you can't write off the education expense. So we're going to grab it as a startup expense, and there's only one type of entity that we can do that in. It's a C corp. That C corp is also going to be the manager of the LLCs that own the real estate. What that allows us to do is move any profit that would ordinarily flow onto my personal return and use it to the corporation so that we can grab all of our expenses. That's why we do it. Is there a risk of a double tax? Yeah, there's a risk of a double tax in a C corp, but only if you show profit, and then it'll be taxed at 21% at the corporate rate, and then it'll be taxed at your long-term capital gains rate, which could be 0, 15, or 20%. So it depends on what your income is. So I always say, hey, that double tax, I control how much income there's going in there. So I have a lot to say about it. So I'm never worried. About 80% of our companies, for example, about 80% of the C corps at least zero out. Is that a fair assessment? Yeah. Jeff's the head of the accounting department. They do over 6,000 returns a year, some ridiculous number. And yeah, the vast majority are zeroed out. And how long can you claim a startup cost for your business? You can go back indefinitely as long as you can tie it into the startup of your business, and you can carry those losses, 20 years on a corporate
return? No, it's indefinite now.
Oh, it's indefinite. So there you forever. But what I would usually do is if I have a C corp, I'm probably going to kill it if it's not making any money and I have losses trapped in it. I can use those losses under a 1244 stock loss election against my personal income. So I'm gonna take that at some point. And yes, if you use Anderson, we make that election on all of our businesses. All right. We have a lot of questions. We plan to use the corporation for several hundred thousands a year, and we W-2 employees drawing about 25% of that. Does that still work well? Just giving numbers for an idea. Jennifer, under that, you're probably worse off as a C corp if you're showing the profit there. I would more than likely be making you an S corp under those circumstances. But I want to do a little comparison. Again, it depends. If you're only taking 25% of the salary, then the rest of it's going to be either taxed at the corp, which if you leave it in the corp, chances are you're going to be fine. If you take it out of the corp, then you have to worry. So if you're building up your business and you're going to like really carry that thing forward for many years, then you're probably better off being a C corp. If you're living off the money, you're probably going to be better off as an S corp. In either case, I'd be looking at a retirement plan as well to shelter a bunch of that income. So anyway, that's fun. All right. What happens if you extended but didn't pay your estimated tax by April 15th? Here's a fun one. Your taxes aren't due, like your tax return isn't due until after your extension. So like whenever somebody says my taxes are due on April 15th, I say that's not correct. That's the first deadline, but you have an absolute right to go to October 15th, but your taxes paid are supposed to be paid by April 15th. And so this is a question where they're saying, hey, I extended. So they have their tax return is not yet due, but their taxes were due back on April 15th. And so the IRS assesses you 0.05% per month.
0.5%.
0.5? It's half a percent, right?
Half a percent.
Oh, I think
too many zeros.
Too many zeros. Isn't it 0.05? Like 0.1 is 10%. So 0.5 would be 5%. So 0.05 would be half of a percent. You're talking to a lawyer. I'm just teasing you. It's half of a percent. We'd look at it as 0.05, but if I was multiplying like $100, half of a percent, 0.5 would be
0.005.
0.05.
It's 5%. No. Are we losing people? Or?
Yeah, forget it. It's half of a percent.
It's half percent. Yeah, we agree on that.
6% would be about for per year. So somebody says, I thought taxes were due when you started your business. You're supposed to be paying your taxes if you're having a bill. If you're going to owe, you pay as you go. But if you owe taxes, if you have quarterly, you're going to have underpayments too. But you wouldn't have quarterly. If they're anticipating that they're going to have a big tax bill, what is it, over first year, do they have to file the quarterlies?
Yes. So corporations aren't exempt from, there's no safe harbor for them. So they have to pay in estimates based on whatever mm-hmm. they make a quarter.
Yep.
Individuals, if you owe less than $1,000, there's no requirement for estimated.
Hey, there we go. So Philip is saving us. So 1% is 0.01. Half a percent is 0.005 or 0.5. So you're making Jeff feel all warm and fuzzy. I just add zeros to things, guys. All right. With education expenses, how do you delineate those expenses and what is acceptable? It's just an ordinary necessary expense if it's education, right?
Right.
The question is it something that's improving your job skill or is it required to keep your licensing? So for example, I'm a lawyer, so continuing legal education is immediately expensive. Or is it something that creates a new job skill opportunity? That's why we always look at it and say, if you're an investor, the IRS says, oh, you don't get to write that stuff off. Or if you didn't already have real estate, we're not going to let you personally write it off. We're just going to say no until you actually are in that business. You don't get to deduct it. That's why we always set up a C corp, because it's called a startup expense. It helped to get started and then we grab it. But if you go to school to become an accountant is a great example. You go to school to become an accountant, you can't write that off. But if you're an accountant and you go back to school to increase your skills, mm-hmm. then you can anyway. So there's a whole bunch of stuff. I'm a full-time real estate agent and took an education related expense, must be expense, against an apartment investment, which is a significant amount, can be used as an expense. So the answer is, yeah, according to the IRS, if you're already in that business, then you can write it off. So so even if you are a sole proprietor, you're going to be okay as long as you're already into that. Plus, you're an active business. I wouldn't be a sole proprietor, though, as a real estate agent. And I certainly wouldn't make a bunch of money as a real estate agent as a sole proprietor. Yay, you have about a 700% chance more of being audited than your S-Corp counterpart, and you're paying more tax. Not every $100,000, it's somewhere in the $7,000 range. So half a percentage over what time period? That's half a percent per month. Oh my God, somebody's saying the truth is no one, including businesses, are really legally required to pay any income taxes. That is not. Don't read that stuff. You'll end up in jail.
All of that information that you see about taxes being illegal is being written from jail.
Yeah. And do not do that. Please don't. Oh my God. Oh my God. Some people are getting into this stuff. Stop that. Yeah, the Supreme Court already made that decision and they're the law of the land. So yeah, don't try to raise constitutional arguments at this point. All right, I had a real estate school for 15 years and have bought and sold properties. Can I write off the training and expenses incurred since I have a strong background in a training academy and made investments? So this one kind of like, this is an interesting question. If it's the existing business, then absolutely. If the training is related to real estate and it's the existing business, then absolutely. absolutely. If you don't have any investments and then you take training, even though you have a background in it, the IRS is going to say no. It's just the nature of investments. Unless you set it up, make it a C corp
for
plans, and I would like to cash out or reallocate. Funds were not used for college. How do I do this? So Jeff, you love 529 plans, right?
I also have two 529 plans for my grandchildren. The problem is what happens if they don't go to college?
Yep. And if you don't go to college and you don't meet one of the exceptions, there's two exceptions. One is
the beneficiary passes.
The beneficiary passes away. Number two is they get a scholarship.
Correct.
Three is I put it to somebody else. Exactly what I do. And that's what I
went. I went to public school too.
So anyway, here's something else. So your 529 plan, you put in after tax dollars.
Now, once again, the problem is
the
beneficiary passes.
The beneficiary passes away. Number two is they get a scholarship.
Correct.
Three is I put it to somebody else.
Right. So 529 plans are really flexible. You can change beneficiaries very easily.
Yep.
Because what often happens is you have money put aside for one child and they don't go to school.
Somebody just said, get an IUL instead. Israel, yes. That's exactly what I do, and that's what I would recommend to people. But
now, one significant change to the 529 plans beginning in 18 is that it can now be used for high school and elementary education.
Yep. Any education expense, even when they're in, educated. Everybody's sending their kids to private school now. This is crazy. I went to public school.
I went to public school too.
So anyway, here's something else. So your 529 plan, you put in after-tax dollars. So if you just want to take the money out and you're like, forget this 529 plan, because my guess is you're making about 3% a year or something.
Yeah, the returns are awful.
They're horrible. But with the market going up over the last few years, you think you're doing great. So that's good. But the historical has been stinky. But if you have them, you can take the money out. You get a 10% penalty on the earnings beyond what you put into it. And you have to pay income tax on it. So
on the earnings.
On the earnings only, not what you put in. Because you remember, you didn't get a tax deduction for putting it in. So it's just the earnings. So if these things were anemic and they didn't make a ton of money, like you got hammered in 2007 and it's just now recovering, you may not really have much earnings and you may be able to just take the money out.
And another thing, even when you take the money out, say it's you're the grantor on this thing and you take it out for your beneficiary child to pay for their tuition. If you take it out yourself and pay it, you're probably going to end up with an IRS notice that you're going to have to explain that it was paid directly to the school or paid indirectly to the school. So just something to be aware of if you do that. The easier way is just to have it paid directly to the school for tuition fees.
Much easier. Here's a question. Somebody says, you can use it for trade schools too, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, I believe it's for anything that's, they've really loosened them up, by the way, guys. Like they're letting, just because they were anemic, they just, people, it was basically a way to sell mutual funds. And so they came up with another way to sell you a financial product where they take 70% of the growth and give you 30 and tell you that they're doing you a favor.
You can buy a computer with it if your kid needs one.
Yeah, computers, all the laptop, all their books. The books are probably more than the tuition nowadays. Can't you just take out the principal only and leave the earnings in? No penalty, no taxes?
That's kind of how the Roth works.
I'm not sure if you can do it on...
I'm not sure if you can do it on the 529 plan either.
And Alyssa, that's a good question. I'm not certain. And then somebody said uniforms. I believe so. But, that's something we'd have to look at. I would email that in, Jimmy, just so we can actually get you an actual answer. We do grab the questions and shoot them back. All right, next one. I am 73 and have a self-directed IRA and a brokerage account. So you have a self-directed. Why are you doing a self-directed IRA and a brokerage account? Stop doing that, because a self-directed IRA means you're paying somebody for it. Unless it's free, I would just open up an IRA in a TD Ameritrade. I have a lot of real estate losses. Can I roll part of my IRA into my Roth? And is there a limit to how much I can roll over? So first off, you're 73 and they roll it into an IRA. Can you roll an IRA into a Roth?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I roll my IRA into my Roth? Yes, it's taxable to you when you do it. And so if you have real estate losses, this is how real estate losses are kind of funky. If you are an investor, then no, you're not. Those real estate losses are not going to offset your traditional income tax burden from rolling the IRA into a Roth. So you would actually be assessed the income tax rolling it over, and you'd have these real estate losses, which you can't use to offset that income that you just keep carrying forward. If you are a real estate professional, then those losses would offset it. So this is where tax planning really becomes important. If you can qualify as a real estate professional this year, then you could roll over as much of that IRA into a Roth that you want, and you can offset it all.
Yeah, right. So losses from rental properties, it's not going to work. Losses from flipping, that would work because that's considered ordinary income.
Mm-hmm. Losses from flipping. Yeah, a lot of real estate losses. So we'd have to look and see what kind of real estate losses.
And then the third is if you have capital losses from real estate investing, that's not going to work either.
Yep.
Because you need capital gains to offset those capital losses.
Yep. So we'd have to know a little bit about those losses. And the answer is always going to be...
Ooh, can I say it depends?
No. I wasn't going to say it depends, but you have control. The answer is always going to be it's up to you. Do you want to take the actions necessary to make it deductible to you? If you have previous real estate losses and then you qualify as a real estate professional, you can still offset them, right? So we just have to pick a year to become a real estate professional.
No, I believe if you have passive losses...
Previous passive losses.
They stay trapped. Yeah, you sell the property.
That would stink, Ola. So we have to really look at those real estate losses. And then it's maybe something where we sell some things with gain because, hey, you don't have to pay tax on it.
That's right.
And then you use that to pay the tax on the roll of the IRA into the Roth. A bunch of people ask questions about this. The 529, that's not deductible. Those are post-tax benefits. Can my LLC create its own self-directed IRA? It's vice versa. The self-directed IRA would create the LLC. Otherwise, it's a prohibited transaction and you disqualify that's the self-directed IRA. What constitutes real estate professional? I've answered that a couple times, but it's 750 hours of your professional time. Number one use of your professional time in the field of real estate, the buying and selling of real estate or construction or any of that stuff would fall underneath that category. And you have to materially participate in your real estate activities. And material participation could be 100 hours or the number one use of hours.
And like we just said, I think the one time we may not want to do that is if we have substantial losses, passive losses already.
Yep. I like you.
Are you looking to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and grow your wealth? Are you a real estate investor, stock trader, or business owner? If you answered yes, Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection Workshop is for you. Let host Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman teach you how to protect and keep more of what you earn. Our workshops are held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. Two in-person tickets to the workshop are only $99. To learn more about the dates and locations, visit AndersonAP.com and register today.
All right. If I buy a mobile home park, and we're seeing a lot of this now, are the tax benefits the same as buying a residential stick brick property with the depreciation? So first off, Jeff, you see a lot of these. What are people usually buying when they buy a mobile home park?
Well, it's either one of two things. They're buying just the property, not the mobile homes. And in that case, the value is going to be divided between land and what we call land improvements, which is 15-year property.
Yeah. So like you have a nice big plot with these little pads on it for the mobile home. And then you have the little mobile homes that sit on it. They're either personal property, they're vehicles, or if they're attached to the ground, then they become real estate. But they're the improvement. That's our realm. When we look at the land and the pads, then the roads and the wiring and all the things that you do to improve
and it. And even the pads themselves.
Even the pads themselves would be 15-year property, which means, yeah, we can write those off. But the land itself, we can't. It's non-depreciable. But so we'd have to do a cost segregation on the land to determine which portion of it is depreciable and which one's not.
And you typically have some type of landlord building on the property that's probably going to be a 39-year property. Depending on a lot of some of them I don't think would last 39 years that I've seen.
Well, that's where your cost segregation comes in. That's where you look at it and say, all right, what is really structure? What is a bunch of, appliances and stuff like that? What's less than 39-year property? And if it's less than 20, then you get to write it off this year. You get bonus depreciation. So,
but where the big difference comes in is who actually owns the mobile homes in the mobile home park.
Well, let's get back to breaking it down. So you have the land, you have the pad, and then you have a piece of structure on it. If it's attached to the ground, then it's the same thing as a stick brick property. You can depreciate the improvement, but if it's attached to the ground and you don't own it, it's somebody else's, then you can't. Or if it's not attached to the ground, but you own it, it is definitely not real estate, but it is definitely personal property. And how would you handle that? You would just write that off, wouldn't you?
Yeah. They have a fairly short life. They have a weird life. life.
But it's less than 20, so you'd bonus depreciate it. So the answer is, man, it really depends. It's fact-based, but you can get more tax benefits by buying the mobile home park. Like the, we were just goofing around on mobile home parks before. And when you start doing cost seg, there's places that are going as high as 50% of the land value for the improvement of like having to put the pads down and everything else. In other words, if it was just a lot, they'd say it's not worth anything. Do you have to be a real estate professional to do a cost segregation at tax time? No, Chris. But if you do cost segregation, it usually creates losses. And if you have losses in excess of your real estate income, then you'd want to be a real estate professional to offset your other income with those losses. So if I create a $30,000 loss and I'm just an investor, I carry that $30,000 loss forward. If I'm a real estate professional, then it offsets my other income and I pay a lot less in tax. Is there any good strategy to take out a 401k distribution and invest in real estate? Yeah, you loan it out. With bonus depreciation, can we offset the 401k distribution? Well, if you take the money out too early, Satish, you're going to have a 10% penalty or in a tax hit. And yeah, then you could use the bonus depreciation to perhaps offset it. Or you can borrow up to $50,000.
Well, what if we just left the money in the plan and
invested it
that way?
You could do that too, Satish. What Jeff is saying is that you could use the 401k itself and purchase the real estate. You just got to be careful not to violate any of the rules.
Right.
Disqualified party rules and all that. All right, we got a few more to go through. It is with a current employer. They're not going to let you touch it, Satish. You might be able to borrow against it, but if you're with a current employer, they're going to be very restrictive on what you can do. All right, if I were to have an online health coaching business where people can complete purchase transactions through an automated website, how will the income produced be taxed? All right, now this is fun because this looks like a really straightforward question. And you'd normally say, hey, it's a health coaching business. It's ordinary income, but it really does depend on what you're selling. If you're selling a book, for example, then it really depends on whether who actually is selling the book and whether you're going to be getting a royalty. Then it would still be ordinary income, but it wouldn't be subject to self-employment tax. But now we're getting cute. It's ordinary income. Let's just call it that. It's all going to be active just because it's through an automated website and you're not doing much. They still figure that you're working, you're making it happen.
And we're also looking in this. It's not actually what's being asked, but sales tax rules are changing.
Yep.
On website sales and
They're hitting everybody. They outdid, what was it, Quill was the Supreme Court decision that came out of Wisconsin.
Right. Well, with the decision last year, the various states now have the opportunity to rewrite their rules and start taxing some of these website sales.
Yep. They said it basically selling in a state, they can assess the sales tax. And it used to be that unless you had a actual contact with that state, you didn't. So physical contact. All right. Somebody's asking some other questions. I got a bunch of questions to go through. This is the end of the set question. So we're going to have to go back in and we're going to go through all your questions that you answered live. Somebody just asked, what do you charge for services as a tax attorney? Chris, if you become platinum, it's $35 a month. If you want accounting help and representation, then it depends. There's a simple package. It's $2,500 to get started, or just do the platinum. You're going to be able to get so much out of that. And if you need a detailed representation, then we could charge you based off of what the work is. I hate charging hourlies, so if you can't tell. Cool specials for you guys. I offer this every time, so don't feel like this is a one-time only. It's the TaxWise workshops, doing three of them this year. They're two-day tax-intensive workshops. We go over 30 tax strategies. You get access to all the recordings and to live streams. It's AndersonAdvisors.com, 3-for-1. The total price is $197. It's insanely cheap. The only thing it doesn't include is attending live. You can watch live stream and you can watch all the recordings. People say, why would I do three? Because I changed them up. Because in the beginning of the year, we're looking at forward planning. Middle of the year, we are going over all the regs and everything that's changed and some strategies for this year. End of the year, we are doing stuff that is about closing the year out. So in November, it's all end of year tax strategies. You go through an entire year, you are going to kick some tail. Other things, just because we feel like being very, very generous, more free stuff. You guys broke my website last time I did this, so that we've put it on a more robust server. It's the Infinity Investing Workshop /signup. You get the Infinity Investing Workshop for free. It's an 11-part workshop. It will show you how to create infinite wealth. The idea is that in my world, I don't really care about somebody's net worth. I care about how many days they could live without having to work. So you could be worth $1 million, but if you have a high burn rate, you're going to last 10 months, you know. But somebody else, is this the stuff you're supposed to send me? Yeah. Sorry, Sherry. This is it. I think I asked Patty to hook you up. Toby Bad. But yeah, you can actually sign up. It's free, free tax. Just use that as the code. Go through it, share it with younger people. I'm just going to say, not that you guys aren't awesome, but I'll just tell you that people, if you can get to them before they've gotten into too much debt, before they've gone through school and gotten an English degree for $300,000 at best, it just is a different mindset. And it's really helpful because you learn what's actually a good investment, what's not a good investment by some simple rules that you can put things through. It's a litmus test. It's free, guys. It is truly a lot in there. The only thing that you can do as an Infinity Investor is we have a mastermind group that's a whopping $100 a month that you can also do annual, get it even below that, where we go over a whole bunch of different investments. I just want people to make more money, keep more money, save more money. For us, frankly, it's better for society that you get it because you tend to do better stuff with it than the government does with it. All right. That's about as political as I get. iTunes, you can go on and get our podcast. They are free. You're going to see there's a ton of different topics. You get all the Tax Tuesdays. We break them into two pieces always, and you can listen to it while you are sweating, doing your elliptical or treadmill or yoga or whatever you're doing. You can get some great tax knowledge to motivate you. Let's see. If you have questions, send them in Tax Tuesday at Anderson Advisors or visit AndersonAdvisors.com. Subscribe. So you guys rock. All right. So now lots more questions. I'm going to dive into Guy. I'm going to dive into yours. So here's my question. Can a newly formed 501c3 nonprofit foundation file their tax return on Form 990N when its application for tax exempt status is still pending and it has no assets and no revenues? Or does it need to use another form? Nope. You can use the N. It takes about 5 minutes. And it's only, those are for those if it's less than $50,000 that you gave it, Guy, you can actually use the 990N.
Correct. Gross receipts of less than $50,000.
Yep. So, yep. Somebody says, working out in the gym while I listen and learn. Yep. You are like a lot of folks. Actually, one of my guys here, Corey.
As long as he doesn't say sweating to the oldies, meaning us.
Oh, my God. Wasn't that, what was that guy? The guy who wore the stripe.
Richard Simmons?
Simmons, yes. Went into the oldies. My mom used to do that. All right. That's horrible. I used to remember. This is like bad visuals. Like, remember the 80s when they would wear the whole body leotard thing? And mm-hmm. it was like who was that? Jamie Lee Curtis. She did a movie or something. That was my mom. She decided she was going to wear this. Oh, boy. Bad things to remember. All right. So, yeah, don't do that. Don't wear a unitard in the gym. All right. Is the TaxWise workshop a live workshop? Yep. You can come live. It's on our website, or the live cast is $197 for all three and all the recordings. The only problem we have is we always sell out and my room only holds so many people and I don't want to do it too big. I like having about 50 people live, although we always go above that. But I like to have it as a smaller group because, frankly, it's like this. I like questions. We can answer questions all day long and it's not, I don't want to have to tell you. I am not thinking like you and you don't think like me. I'd rather you ask the question as what's relevant to you rather than me trying to guess what's relevant to you.
It's a really good experience, but like you said, it's limited to how many people we can have actually in person.
Yep. And we like tax. You may not. You may start throwing stuff at us like, stop it. Stop talking that tax. Like
throwing shoes at us, sir.
Yeah. Showing stuff. What is the best way to pay out bonus to employees based on a collection goal? So it's kind of interesting, Michelle, what you're talking about. A lot of people say, I want to make an employee a partner. I want to incentivize employees. Here's the deal. You use the magic word called bonus, which means it's not commission. And the reason this is important to, as from a business owner standpoint, is that commissions they're entitled to, bonus can be contingent. You can put them contingent on things. So if somebody, the day before you pay the bonus, you find out they've been stealing from you, you're not required to write that check. A commission, you still have to. Isn't that messed up? And if I was doing it on a collection goal, I would just do it that way. I would say based off of certain incentives that you reserve, you have the right. And I would always use something that's subjective, because there are people that hit certain goals, but they undo certain values that are really important to your business.
Yes.
So it's not about the money. Let's just put it that way. Money is usually secondary after your values. And if they're violating your values, then I don't really want to, like, they could be financially hurt in ways where they would still say they're entitled to.
Yeah. And I've seen that where bonuses or the potential for bonuses can change people's behavior, because then they're working towards the bonus and not for the greater good.
Right. And now to answer her question is the bonus taxable to the S corp and employee? No, it's a deduction. So it's taxable to the employee. Anytime you give an employee compensation, and this is the one that accountants get wrong, in my experience, probably 99% of the time, compensation is not cash. That is one type of compensation, but compensation, I could give you a car, it's taxable. I could give you a trip, it's taxable. I could give you a stack of $100 bills, it's taxable. I have to do the withholding and run it through payroll.
Right.
There's no such thing as, hey, I gave you some cash on the down low and I can deduct it. You want to make sure that you're running it. Somebody is asking, another Michelle is asking about the 199, the 20% deduction. So you're asking about the $315,000 of income. So what Michelle's asking a question about phasing out of the 20% deduction. So I'll go through this with you, Michelle, so that it makes sense. So the 199A deduction is this 20% deduction against qualified business income, or 20% of your taxable income, whichever is less.
Right.
And what they do is there's a phase out on for specified service businesses that's absolute. 315, I believe, is the phase out on the
that's when it starts and goes up to low 400.
415 on the individual, on the married couple,
right.
Or it's 157 to 215 or something like that on the single, which I was looking at it. But but the phase out is over a period of time. Now, only if you are a professional or in a, what is it, entertainment, if you are, is your reputation and skill like a doctor, accountant, attorney, veterinarian, engineer, those folks, you're a specified service business and you phase out completely. So for example, for you, it'd be at 415, you'd be done completely. Underneath that, you'd get a partial deduction if you are a specified service business. If you are just a regular business, then they apply to other tests. And those two other tests is the 20% or 50% of all W-2 wages paid by the business, whichever is less, or you compare that 50% and you compare it with 25% of the wages or 2.5% of all the assets.
And 2.5%.
You added the 25 plus the
right.
2.5% of the undepreciated basis of the property. So if you have a bunch of real estate, it can be a big one. So I just gave you, like, it's somewhat convoluted. I use a little chart. Jeff uses a chart. Mm-hmm. I know that we always start off with, is it a specified service business? Do we have to worry? If you are not a specified service business, so you're just a traditional Dairy Queen, real estate, by the way, qualifies as qualified business income, as long as it's not triple net leases and commercial property. So if you have a bunch of single family residences and stuff, you still get the 20%. All of those things are non-specified service business. But if you go above your income, not even the qualified business, but your income goes above that 315, we got to start applying the secondary test. And that's where it's impossible to do that if you're just a partnership or a sole proprietor. You really have to have an S corp where there's a wage being paid out. And if you're saying why not a C corp, it's because that doesn't flow through. The 199A is only for pass-through entities. So I just gave you a thumbnail sketch.
And some people are going to both have that specified industry and non-specified. I mean, you could be a doctor and your spouse could be run a surf shop. So while that specified income may be excluded, the other income wouldn't necessarily be excluded.
Mm-hmm. Good one. Somebody said, hey, I filed a C corp in September of 2018. I do not know when my corporate taxes are due. If it's a C corp, chances are you're either at a September year end or a June year end. And in either case, your taxes will not be due until sometime, more than likely next year.
Right.
Because we have an extension of 6 months. So let's just say it was a September year end. It's due at the end of or the middle of December 15th. Or is it January 15th now? It's 4 months, isn't it?
Right.
So it'll actually be due in October of 2021.
Oh, if it's a junior, and that's got a weird year. That's got a weird
due. Oh yeah, that's a 3 month then. That's the so then it would be September 15th or
but
March.
But it would still be 10 months of This is what we deal with.
Yeah, the IRS keeps changing the rules, or I should say Congress keeps changing the rules. But Roger, you can relax. It's a long time from now, but if you want to find out, Patty will grab your information and we'll let you know. And somebody says it's spandex now. Yes, you know what guys are wearing now? They're wearing Lululemon.
Do I really want to hear this?
They're wearing Lululemon, and they're admitting it. Like Clint, my partner, he always wears Lululemon now, and I'm like, that's yoga gear. Stop that.
I'm gonna have to drink heavily to get this picture out of my mind.
Yes, he's running around. He was wearing like capri pants, so that was really disturbing. All right. Can you use your personal home and repairs, equipment and materials on a personal home as a loss if you're currently working on it under your business? That's interesting. So, Christine, the answer to your question is really, we always look at a home and we say, let's say that you're using it, you have a corporation that's reimbursing you for an administrative office or a home office. That's really what we're going to need to do. You have direct expenses and indirect expenses. Direct expenses, you can write off completely. So if it's fixing up an area of your house, then yes. If it is not fixing up an area and you're just doing regular home repairs, then it's you can reimburse the portion of the home that is being used for business. And a lot of people use square footage. I am not one of those people. I use the room method, which I say, how many rooms are there? And I take whatever. If I have one room that is business and there's six rooms in the house, then I'm taking 1/6. I'm reimbursing myself for all the expenses. If it's computers and things like that that are used for the business, I can do 100% of them. But if it's utilities, then I would do a portion. Somebody says exterior painting, gutters, masonry. Probably not, Christine. You would get the portion. That's the benefit, is whatever you put onto the house, you even get the depreciation. You get the portion of the depreciation. Right. So what you'd want us to do is email it in. We'd get some facts from you and be able to tell you what it is. But it's probably going to be, somebody says, it's probably going to be around 20%. Is the HOA portion reimbursable? Yeah, everything is an indirect expense. So you're going to grab anything that's related to that home. The only one that's not typically added in is if you're doing exterior maintenance, like you have a landscaper,
right,
unless you have people showing up at your house that you're meeting. So like if you're a realtor, you're doing real estate deals and you have a team that shows up, then you can write it off.
Yeah, your pool maintenance is not likely to be deductible.
Nope, not the pool, but you know, everything else. How old does a child have to be before you can put the business in their name? If it's a child and you want to actually have them own the business, I probably wouldn't do that, but it's 18 is.
And that's what I was thinking about that earlier today, that do we really want to put a business in the name of somebody who's not, can't legally be bound in contracts?
Nope. And if they're under the age of 13, absolutely not. You can't do that. What you can do, however, is have an UGMA and either a Uniform Gift to Minors Act or a trust for it with them as a beneficiary. Actually, somebody's popping that up too. And then you would be the trustee, and then you could do things on their behalf. So if you remember Donald Trump's story and the dads putting stuff in their names as kids, that's what he's doing, is he's basically saying, I will control it, but you will be the owner. And then he's making gifts to his children. And it's driving the press crazy. Donald did not write the laws. His dad did not write the laws. He's probably just using them to the extent humanly possible, maybe twisting a few things, but chances are it's all black and white. And it's like, hey, somebody wrote it. If a portion of admin office expenses reimbursable from the C Corp, are there any other expenses that pass through for my LLC loss? Not sure what that means. So the home office expense, so you can only be reimbursed once on an expense. That's the first thing. So if I am reimbursing expenses on my house, so for example, if I'm taking 25% and I'm applying it to my cable bill, then your company can't go up and reimburse that same cable bill again, because that would be income to you, at least the 20% portion. What I'd do is I'd be breaking out saying, this is a direct expense related to my business. And I would write that, I would reimburse that. You do not have to report that income, and it's deductible to the company. Cell phones are the greatest example I can think of. It could reimburse 100% of your cell phone, even though you're on it 90% of the time. You do not have to report that as income. It's an expense to the company and creates a little bit of a loss. See, where do I put a deduction for K-1 on an S Corp personal return and under 1120S. Susan, I'm not sure. The S Corp goes on your page two of your Schedule E of your 1040. The deductions are on the actual 1120S. That's where you're putting.
Right.
And if you have a loss, then it passes through and you can write off your losses from your S Corp up to your basis. I have two commercial buildings inside of a Florida LLC. How can I protect this asset and how can I make it publicly private? If you have two commercial buildings, there is a way to do it. You have to have a Wyoming LLC set up a in-state. So in this case, it's Florida LLC. So your name's not on it. You can do that and make it a member-managed business in Florida, managed by the Wyoming or Nevada LLC. Either state will work. And I would put it in two separate commercial buildings. That's how you'd protect the asset from you and from each other. Probably want to pull some of the equity out, either with a friendly lien or something, to make sure that it's not completely exposed. It's always the equity that's exposed inside. Outside, it'd be really tough for somebody to get that. So if you did something, if you did something personally that got you sued, they wouldn't be able to take it. For a starting real estate investor, wholesalers especially, what do you suggest for a business entity and how is it taxed? I'm almost always for a wholesaler that's an active business. I'm probably going to start that with a C Corp, maybe an S, depending on the facts and circumstances. But C Corp is usually where you start. And you can make your S election, like Jeff, I don't want to say something that's out of, but you can make that S election next year, right?
Right. You could do that anytime.
You could relate it back too. If you screw it up, you can actually, there's ways to make late elections up to when you file the return. So I always start with a C because I can always go to an S. But if I go to an S, if I start with an S, then it's hard to go back to a C. And if I do, then I have a 5-year waiting period anyway. So I tend to start with C Corp. If you invest in a qualified opportunity zone fund that owns real estate and you sell the real estate in 10 years, getting the gain tax-free, how does that gain show up on your tax return? Does it affect your AGI? And if it does, is there a way to smooth out that AGI hit? It's excluded. You don't have to report it.
I'm assuming it's going to be the same way that you exclude the gain when you first put it in. You've reported, but there's an exclusion code that you wipe it out.
Yep. So when you sell, it's actually the fund. The inside asset, this is what's weird. They just gave us regs that said if you sell the asset inside the qualified opportunity zone, as long as you reinvested it in a year, no tax. It's almost like a 1031 exchange inside the fund, as long as it's qualified opportunity zone property. So they literally gave us another 180 pages about 3 weeks ago of regs.
So I could sell my property and then buy the one across the street. It's
yep. So if you fix up a property and like let's say you fix up some old apartments or something and then you go to do another one, you don't have to, like, even though you only owned it for 4 years, as long as you roll it into more opportunity zone properties, you're going to be fine, as long as you meet the test of improving it, if it's real estate or if it's a business, you just buy another. I want to get earned income so I can have credits for SSA. I have a C Corp that is the GP of my LP. Do I take the income from the C Corp and as W-2 or 1099? You would want to do a W-2. And if you want to have credits for your Social Security, you're either going to be an S Corp or a C Corp. Those are your choices. You cannot do that through a partnership. You cannot do that through a sole proprietorship as wages. You could do it as a sole proprietor if it's all active income. But it sounds like if I see a GP of an LP, it sounds like it's an investment partnership. Franchise tax, no tax due. What do we need to submit or file? Tolu, I don't know where you're at. If that's Texas, you file a form. Otherwise, the only other franchise tax that I really deal with is California. You always owe something.
Right. Tennessee is about the same way with their franchise tax.
Tennessee has the FONTS exclusion, which is
family-owned
non-corporate entities. So it has to be a LLC, right? Yeah, you just have to own it. What's your opinion on Ray Reynolds and how he structures umbrella corporations with subdivisions and says that by structuring, you wouldn't have to pay any taxes legally? He's wrong. Yeah, you don't. That's not true. That maybe I'm missing something. I don't know Ray Reynolds, but there's no such thing as subdivisions and not paying tax. You always have a tax.
Maybe but, it's one of those unicorn subdivisions.
Yeah, it's weird stuff. You know, if you're talking subdivisions as in like land subdivisions and massively depreciating the subdivision, the improvement, again, there's no way to not have the tax on the land. But again, I'd have to look at this. Guys, if something sounds good, too good to be true, run it by somebody else. That's all. Things should be able to pass scrutiny. And like in my world, Jeff, we do the tax returns. So lots of people will tell you to do something, but they're not actually on the hook personally mm-hmm. for the advice they're giving you. Whereas we've been doing this for 20 something years. We filed so many returns. We've defended. There's so few audits. Like if you do this stuff right, I hope you're starting to catch on that there's not a lot of reporting and the IRS isn't really interested in like the small corporation world. They want to make sure that if you have an S corp, you're paying a salary. If you're taking money out of it, that's about it. A small C corp, there's just not much for them to get because there's so many ways to write things off. That's why they're incentivized to do that. So it's just, if you do things right, you really don't have too many problems. Let's see other fun questions. I had one weird, which was, could you use the solar credit to offset Social Security taxes? I didn't know that off the top of my head. And
I'm not sure how you would do that.
You get a tax credit and it's federal tax credit. So it's any taxes due. It's kind of weird, but it would offset any tax you have. So.
Well, yeah, but Social Security is, are you saying tax on Social Security?
No. Oh, a tax on Social Security or the actual OASDI or the Medicare.
That's a withholding. So there's no way to offset.
I'm talking about if you're a business and you have a solar credit. So let's say.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So if you're a sole proprietor yes. or you're in a partnership or whatever, or you're in anything where you get a tax credit, it's just a tax credit. So it's against all taxes that are federal. So from what I could see, you get the tax credit. It's pretty awesome. And by the way, in the TaxWise workshop, I'm going to do a solar section. That's a huge area that I think has not been hit by the investors in the world out there, the rental owners, single family residents, where you have tenants. I think you get a 30% tax credit, plus you get to write off 85% of the improvement again.
Yeah, I would have thought it would have been 70%. That only makes sense to me, but it's 85%.
It's 85. You get half of the credit that you have to
that you can depreciate.
That you can depreciate. Yeah, the way they phrase it is the opposite. They say that you have to reduce the fair market value of whatever you purchase. So as I'm a platinum member, how would you structure the use of whole life into the real estate investing business? I'd use it as a bank. If you have a whole life policy, I would use it as a bank. Absolutely. And I would pay it that smaller interest rate and I would write it off the interest that you pay as investment interest. And I would make a killing doing that. Well, let's see. I'm running a computerized trading program that trades futures and it makes a lot of profit and there are enough trades to exceed the minimum number to qualify as a trader. Would it be passive income and qualify and disqualify? No, Greg, you could actually do that. So that's the beautiful part about being a trader. It's really tough to meet, but if you're doing a ton, then it's just how much time you're spending doing it and you better not have another job. Can you deduct expenses to see a property? We already did that. Our whole life policy is FDIC insured, guaranteed? No, but not a single insurance company went out of business during the downturn when all the banks went out of business. Somebody said, so I always kind of look at it like the one thing that insurance companies are really good at is calculating risk.
Yes.
Sorry this is late, but I've called Anderson with this question. But do I need to send my federal form 4562 along with form 100 to California franchise tax board?
California actually has their own depreciation form. And I don't recall off the top of my head what the form number is.
Yep. So you would end up doing that on the California form. And I don't know what it is.
And California actually requires you to send your entire federal return with the California return. So they're getting that 4562 anyway.
It says, is it true that I can only deduct $3,000 per year for education with the C Corp? No. Yeah, make that easy. That is not true. You can write off all of the education you need to under a C Corp. What is he thinking about? Capital losses.
Are limited to $3,000 a year. Other than that, I got nothing.
Yep. I can't see it. But it's not with a C Corp. C Corp doesn't have capital losses. C Corp just has.
So we'll stick to the answer of being no. That's not correct.
Yeah. So you can write it off. Can you please explain the method of deducting luxury SUV in an LLC as a real estate investor? There's not really a luxury SUV. It's a luxury car or an SUV. SUV over 6,500 is equipment. You'd write it off.
Yeah. It's not. It doesn't get limited under the luxury vehicle 280F rules.
Yep. Yeah. That was kind of funky. But it really depends on how much you're using it. So I tend to keep cars out of my businesses and I just do mileage. So much easier, cleaner, and it's usually a big. Looking to start a fishing charter business, can I depreciate the full cost of the boat?
Actually, you can. I believe the boats are 7-year lives.
Yeah, it's about that. I was just going to lease out their luxury luxury boat, and but they were really going to spend more time on it. And I was kind of like, hey, you know, it's not quite that easy. But if you're, if it's a fishing charter business, and that's what you're using it for, then yeah, you can write the whole thing up. But it, it really depends on how much of it are you using personally too.
Yeah, and the cases I've seen lately is there, where they're attacking is the use of the boat. Because I think a recent case, they tried to make it a rental and they rented it out a couple times a year, but they were primarily using it for personal use.
And Adam, if you're going to do a fishing charter, you need to let me know. I spend a lot. I used to live on a boat. We will come out and we will fish with you. We support our clients, even if it means going fishing with them. Hopefully it's not someplace horrible. So, all right. Can I use any part of a lump sum payment from a pension without tax consequences before rolling the remaining payment into an IRA? Leonard, the way you do that is not a lump sum payment, but you roll it all into your into a 401k. You know, typically, if it's a pension from an employer and it goes into, it would roll into an IRA, and then you'd roll that into a solo 401k. You can borrow up to $50,000 for 5 years per participant, up to half of that.
Yeah, distributions that aren't rolled over into some other type of retirement plan are always going to be taxed, no matter how old you are or how much it is. There are some exceptions for the penalty if you're on under 59 and a half. I'm not going to go into all of those, but there's a number of different exceptions for first-time home buyers, education, death. Well, hopefully you don't need it for that. But yeah, otherwise, there's always going to be tax consequences to a distribution.
So if we can loan it out, then there's that. Or you do the investments inside it, then you don't have to worry. If you have required minimum distributions, there is a way to not pay tax and required minimum distributions, and that's to give it to your own nonprofit. It's kind of evil, but you can do up to $100,000 a year direct. You don't have to worry about recognizing it. How much are we allowed for research and development? There's no limit that I'm aware of. He's saying R&D. Is there anything that you're thinking of that's a...
No, there's a limit on the credit you can take. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head.
But if you're just as a corporation and you're doing research and development or any business and you're trying to improve your business, there's no limitation there. It's only if you're looking for, like Jeff said, there is a credit that's floating around out there for companies that are spending a lot of time. Let's see. Somebody said, per the new Trump tax law of depreciating luxury cars and SUV of 100%, is that better or more money car depreciating the mileage? Yeah, you get a first year. So Ralph, I'm going to go back over this real quick. Luxury cars isn't the big deal. It's the weight of the vehicle and the use of the vehicle. So if I have a vehicle that I'm using more than 50% of my business, then I can write it off in the business. But then I have personal use that I have to pay tax on. So let's say I have a $50,000 SUV and I write it all off and I get a $50,000 deduction, but I'm using it for 51% of the time in the business. That means that I would have to allocate the lease value, and they publish this list every year, but it'll be about $12,000 or $13,000 that's going to get allocated to me as tax income. So I get a $50,000 deduction in the business, but I have to recognize $12,000 or $13,000 as an individual. And you have to do that then every year after that, except you don't get the $50,000 deduction anymore. You just have the tax hit every year. And if you drop below 50%, you have to recognize that $50,000 again as income. So if you are using it in your business and it's definitely a business vehicle, then I'd put it in the business. Otherwise, I don't care what the value of the car is. I don't care which car it is. Any car that you're driving that's yours, even if you lease it or you buy it or it's a crappy, like I used to have a 1989 Chevy Dually, it's 58 cents a mile. And I don't have to worry about which car I was driving. I just get it. I'll use Mile IQ and write that off. If I'm doing 20,000 miles a year, I'm getting a nice check for, what would that be, $12,600 that I'm writing myself tax-free, and I'm not worried about depreciating the thing anymore. So that's why I tend to be a little weird. What is the difference between cost segregation and accelerated depreciation for new business acquisition? It's the same thing. And that's going to lead us to where we're over 4:30. I'm going to say to everybody, Jeff, unless you want to jump in, that I want to thank you. For those of you who emailed in questions in the last few days, I have a list that I'm going to start for the next Tax Tuesday. I'm afraid I might be running around in Ohio on the next Tax Tuesday. We'll be doing it remotely, but I'll have you here and I'll make sure that I get on it, assuming that I can get my butt on the Tax Tuesday. I think I've missed one in We're on like 91, so it's not too bad. So we will get here. Buckeyes State here. Yep. So thank you guys for joining us. Jeff, do you have anything else?
You guys have a good couple weeks, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Yep. Come up with some great questions for next time, and we'll keep going through these. If I didn't get to your question, I apologize. We always get like 300, and so I'm piecing through them, so I'm grabbing them. If there's a question that we didn't get to, just email it into Tax Tuesday, and we'll have somebody jump on it. Thank you, guys. Till next time.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.